Chapter 41. The next few minutes were intense, and I didn't dare let it show. If I'd been completely wrong in my deductions, which was possible, God knew it had happened before, then Michael, Sonia, and I were about to walk into the lion's den together. Granted, that worked out for Daniel, but he was the exception to the rule. Most of the time, it works out well only for the lions. That's why the Persians used it as a means of execution. Granted, Michael was working for the same employer, and technically Sonia was too, even if he wasn't wholly decided on whether or not that's what he was doing. But me and the Almighty have never really sat down for a chat. I'm not really sure where he stands on the Harry Dresden issue, and as a result, my theological stance has been pretty simple. I try not to get noticed by anything godly, godlike, or godish. I think we're all happier that way. All the same, given who I was up against, I didn't think it would be inappropriate if a couple of breaks came my way. Hopefully Michael had put in a good word for me. Rosanna walked down the street and lifted a hand. A van cruised up out of the night. It was occupied by a single driver, a thick-necked, broken-nosed type whose eyes didn't look like he was all the way there. One of Nick's fanatics, probably. They had their tongues ritually removed as a point of honor and practicality, from Nicodemus's perspective anyway. I suppose I could ask him to open up and confirm it, but it seemed a little gauche. Michael stuck his head in the van and checked it out. Then he politely opened the passenger door for Rosanna. The denarian stared levelly at him for a moment, then nodded her head and slid into the van. Sonia went in the van first, taking the rearmost seat. I went in after Michael. Rosanna muttered something to the driver, and the van took off. I got nervous for a minute. The van headed west, in exactly the opposite direction from the lake. Then the driver turned north, and after a few minutes, I realized that we were headed for one of the marinas at the north end of Lakeshore Drive. I forced myself to keep my breathing smooth and even. If the bad guys tumbled to the fact that we'd already guessed their location, the situation could devolve pretty quickly. Michael sat calmly, his face imperturbable, his hands resting on the sheathed form of Amorakius, the picture of saintly serenity. Sonia, behind us, let out a low, buzzing snore. It wasn't as saintly as Michael, but it conveyed just as much blithe confidence. I tried to match their calm, with mixed results. Don't get jittery, Harry. Play it cool. Ice water in your veins. The van stopped at one of the marinas off Northerly Island. Rosanna got out without a word, and we followed her. She stalked down to the shore, out onto the docks, and out to a modestly sized ski boat moored at the dock's end. Michael and I went aboard after her. Sonia untied the lines holding the boat to the dock, pushed it away from the pier, and casually hopped across the widening distance and into the vessel. It took her a couple of minutes, but Rosanna coaxed the old boat's engines to life and turned us away from the lights of the city and out into the darkness of the Great Lake. It was eerie how swiftly the world became pitch black. That strange fairy light of the night under a heavy snow vanished out on the waters of the lake, where the snow simply sank into the depths. The low overcast gave us a little light for a time, reflecting the glow of the city. But as the boat continued skimming out into the center of the lake, even that faded away, until I could barely distinguish the outline of the boat and its occupants against the water all around. I wasn't sure how long we went on like that in the dark. It seemed like an hour, but it couldn't have been more than half that. The boat bounced across waves, whump, 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 throwing up splashes of spray that coated the bow in a shining crust of ice. My stomach got a little queasy as I tried to anticipate the motion in the darkness and failed. At length, the rumble of the boat's engine died away and then stopped altogether. The silence was disorienting. I've lived my entire adult life in Chicago. I'm used to the city, to its rhythms, its music, the hum and hiss of traffic, the clatter of elevated trains, the blaring radios, the beeping horns. Cell phone sirens, music, animals, and people, people, people. But out here, in the center of the vast, empty cold of the lake, there was nothing. No heartbeat of the city, no voices, no nothing. except the glug and slap of water hitting the hull of the boat.